There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Thursday. Look out there. Blue skies out the front of our studios here just west of I-65 and just south of Airport Boulevard. And Dr. Bill called for a chance of wintry weather to areas our, to our north and west. Here's what I'm getting, Dalton, and you can check your Clark County connections here. That some flakes were seen in Clark County, and that's about all, even though school, and I understand, abundance of caution, I get it. I mean, you talk about a position, either be President Trump in negotiations where you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, or you could be a school administrator. If you make the kids come to school and it ices up, then you're a pariah, and if you, you know, let them out and it doesn't snow, then you're an idiot, right? I get it. But, yeah, they did not get the – it looks like – really, I saw nothing for Washington County. If y'all can send me pictures or something, if you got any kind of flakes up there, it looks like they did not get it. I mean, school was out in, what, Monroe County, Clark County, Washington County. Looks like just a few flakes in Clark County. So school was out, and the snow really didn't happen. Now, the cold weather still was happening, and Dr. Bill has more about that coming up at about 12:35. He'll fill us in on that. 48 now at our studios. Pretty skies out there, but windy and cold for the remainder of the day. All right, coming up on the show today, lots to talk about, and we'll get into a couple different stories. The latest of the press junket here from Cliff Sims at a discussion of Team of Vipers, the inside look in his opinion from Cliff Sims of the Trump administration. I think it's pretty interesting, and we'll kind of get into that and hash it out here in just a little bit. Also, a little bit more about what's coming up in session today, or in Montgomery. Even though session doesn't start till March, the heads of the different agencies with the state, they are presenting their budgets to the members of the House and Senate in Montgomery. Annual meetings, which heads of state come out and tell the lawmakers and their staffs what the budget needs are for the year, which, of course, will drag me into a conversation of earmarking in the Alabama general fund budget. So we'll get into some state news there as well. That's on the way. Plus, high-tech parking meters coming to downtown. I like the fact that, because quite often when I have to park downtown, I have 35 cents, which is not long enough to do anything downtown. Now there's going to be a way to use your credit card or debit card or even an app on your phone. Can you imagine this? That you could be sitting at a meeting downtown Mobile, or you could be eating lunch or whatever and go, oh gosh, it's about time that the downtown parking diplomats are going to come lay a ticket on my windshield. You could hit your phone app and put more time on your meter. We'll talk to Laura Byrne from the City of Mobile about that coming up in hour number two. I'll start off and lead batter on today's show. Our buddy Brendan Kirby, author of Wicked Mobile, and of course, KirbyOnPolitics.com. Hey man, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
Doing good. I got a lot to get into here as we get started and get your... We have not talked beforehand, so this is the first time I've gotten to ask Brendan this question. First of all, your reaction to the Roger Stone arrest and then the pleading not guilty. What's your take on this?
Well, I mean, the pleading not guilty was easy to predict. Everyone always pleads not guilty.
But he would be somebody who would revel in being... If anybody would revel in being guilty, it would be Roger Stone.
Right. you know, and as far as the rest, I mean, that should not have surprised anyone. Roger Stone himself predicted that he was going to get
arrested. Oh, not that he got arrested, but number one, that CNN had their live truck out there, and number two, and number two, that it was conducted kind of like we heard about the Manafort one with folks and, you know, coming like they're raiding a drug house or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like an intimidation tactic to me, although, you know, many law enforcement people have pointed out, you know, these things can be dangerous, and even if you're dealing with a white-collar criminal or someone not known to be dangerous, they can get out of hand, and I get all that, but,
okay.
You know, there's a meme going around Facebook that compares the number of, you know, armed agents that confronted Roger Stone versus the number of armed soldiers that confronted Osama bin Laden. You know, and you know, the implication being we sent more force to get Roger Stone alone with his wife than we did Osama bin Laden in a guarded compound. So it definitely does look like an intimidation tactic to me. I don't know why they could not have, you know, called his lawyer and negotiated for him to turn himself in. I mean, that sort of thing is done all the time. I've heard this destroy evidence. You know, they were afraid he was going to destroy evidence. I can't imagine what evidence he would have. That Mueller doesn't already
okay,
have.
Yeah, good, good for you bringing that up, because this is, okay, this happened with Manafort, is happening with Roger Stone. Help me, maybe I'm just too cynical, or just, if somebody is out there that has some damning evidence, and they know the Mueller investigation's going on, I just don't think they wait until somebody's knocking on the front door to go flushing it down the toilet. Am I seeing this as a too cynically or something? I mean, you get rid of it beforehand.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure I really buy that argument that they just wanted to make sure evidence wasn't destroyed, because this is not something like it's not a drug case where you're afraid he's going to flush the drug down.
Right. Well, that's what I'm using that as a joke. But
I mean, and really, I mean, and the charge is essentially just like with all these things is that he lied to the FBI about the investigation, lied about stuff that's not actually illegal. You know, he lied about you know, contacts you know, with WikiLeaks, which is not actually against the law. I mean, there's this appearance of this grand conspiracy you know, involving the Trump campaign, but no one has actually been charged with conspiracy, and no one has actually been charged with any kind of underlying you know, election crime, you know, except for Michael Cohen with the Stormy Daniels statement, which had nothing to do with the Mueller investigation. So you know, it shouldn't be hard to prove a lie. I mean, if they charge him with lying, they've got the evidence. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not like they charged him hoping they're going to find evidence in his house that's going to, you know, bolster the case that he didn't tell the FBI agents the truth. Seems pretty clear cut to me. They've got mounds and mounds of evidence. So I don't really buy that. You know, then the only other reason to do it is if you think he's a flight risk, I guess, and if you think that, you know, if we don't nab him in the middle of the night, and we tell his lawyer to have him turn himself in, he's going to be on the next plane to Moscow or something. If that were the case, they would have made the case, you know, to detain him and not let him out, and then they didn't do that. So I don't know. It looks like an intimidation.
Oh, wait. Good point, y'all.
I can say.
Yeah, good point. If the fear was that Roger Stone was going to be a flight risk, yeah, he was in and out, bonded out, and he was on Hannity within, you know, what, 7-8 hours of being arrested, so...
Right, yeah. I mean, they did not make that case in court. If he was such a nefarious, slippery figure that they were afraid he was going to flee jurisdiction, you would think they would have made that case in court and made the argument that, you know, we can't trust having this guy, you know, let out of jail. And after you've been arrested and you're under you know, electronic monitoring and that sort of thing, you're more secure than if you did. To really know, I'd like to see the data, you know, on these nonviolent type crimes, how often this kind of thing goes down, you know, versus just having them turn himself in. I mean, it'd be interesting to see some stats on that.
Yeah, and maybe there is. And I mean, you and I both would be, I mean, if somebody could show the stats where this was, you know, why this was the best practice, then okay. Then I'd be like, okay, well, there's a reason why you do that. So,
yeah, and then the other point that you brought up, you know, CNN. Now, unless CNN was camping outside of Roger Stone's house 24 hours a day, which I wouldn't put past CNN,
right.
But it, you know, assuming they weren't doing that, then somebody tipped them off. I mean, this is just, like, obvious. And it was either someone from Mueller's team directly or someone in the FBI or the larger law enforcement community who had knowledge that the thing was going to go down. I mean, there's no... I mean, the fact that this is even like something that CNN is disputing is hard to believe.
That bothers me almost as much, if not maybe more, than the nature of the arrest being made on Roger Stone. Because if you have media there, us and the media, you know, everybody in talk radio likes to pretend like we're not the media. We're the media as well. But you have the media in general supposed to be the watchdog of government, and when it becomes the attack dog, which I know a lot of people say, oh, well, look at mainstream media. Sure, but there's a difference between them spinning stories and putting out fake news and being there's almost an arm of an investigation and of law enforcement to be there to document it. That leaves me with a sick stomach.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the problem with the media documenting it.
Right, but one being selected,
news is going to happen. You go cover it, but you know, I mean, the tone of CNN's coverage, you know, for the past 2 years, I mean, it's been biased. I mean, there's no other way to say it. It's not just like prime time, you know, hosts pontificating. I mean, their whole lineup from morning to tonight, it's been pretty clear they don't like Trump, and I just think most people would just ask for just basic fairness and even handedness and treat everyone the same. That doesn't mean you don't be aggressive. I mean, obviously you'd be aggressive. You hold people to account. You ask tough questions. You report the truth as you know it. But so much of what goes on CNN isn't just reporting the facts first, as they say, but speculating. You know, they do a lot of speculating. You know, every time one of these news stories breaks, and you know, it's just, I mean, it's dangerous to speculate about, you know, serious matters when you don't really know. And part of that's just the cable format, I guess.
That's for sure. Coming right back and I got to ask you this before we go to the break with Brendan Kirby. Be thinking on this, a question we asked, speaking of Roger Stone, we asked it this morning. If you were forced to get a back tattoo of somebody's face, who would it be? Now, we know Roger Stone has the Nixon face tattoo on his back. Which tattoo would you get? We'll get... Yeah, I'm still stuck on Bob Ross or Yosemite Sam. We'll find out what Brendan says and a whole lot more when we get back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 1221, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday, and no snowmageddon for us. Even the folks in the northern part of the state, I don't think they had any really stick. I know they saw a few flakes in Clark County, but in Birmingham and points to the north where they were expecting a little more, I don't think they even actually had any stick up there. Dr. Bill will have more on our forecast. Still getting cold tonight, and that's coming up in just about 12 minutes. All right, continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby and his book, Wicked Mobile, a perfect reader as well, any time of the year, but also to get you ready for Mardi Gras, because you got a whole chapter about Joe Kane.
Yeah, Joe Kane was a very interesting figure, that chapter is as much about Judy Rayford as it's Joe Kane. I mean, it's kind of set up. I mean, Joe Kane is the wicked figure who flummoxed the Union soldiers during the Civil War. But a lot of it's really Judy Rayford was the journalist and historian who made Joe Kane what he is. Joe Kane was a minor figure in Mardi Gras history until he decided that Mobile should have its own unique Mardi Gras hero, and he revived the story of Joe Kane. So much of the lore around Joe Kane comes from what Rayford wrote, and, you know, he wrote it based on sort of oral histories and talking to old-timers and, you know, records that had been burned in fires. So you know, a lot of it is more legend and myth.
Which I love. And maybe that'll be, you know, I've been bouncing around if forced to. You know, like Roger Stone has the Nixon tattoo on his back, the face of Nixon tattoo. You know, and I had thought about Bob Ross, the late painter, or Yosemite Sam, but maybe, just maybe, like someone suggested, it was the Mobile mask, folks suggested Joe Kane for the back tattoo. If I had to have one, that would be it, probably.
You're probably better off with a dead person. I mean, I was thinking about this question over the break, and I was thinking about some of the, you know, some of the sports, you know, athletes I've rooted for. And if you pick an athlete, especially like a current athlete, you know, what if he gets traded?
That's right. That's right. Or what if it turns out they do something horrible?
But I think it's the same rule. I think we should not build statues of living people.
That's right.
Or name stadiums after living people, because they might embarrass you, and then you're stuck with their name on your stadium. So, I don't know. That's number one. And number two, I would never have a tattoo of someone's face on my back, because that's a lot of pain. That's a lot of...
But I wouldn't either. Listen, it's not... You can't choose that. In this game, you have to, right? So, that's how we started this morning. It's one of these... You don't get to choose or not. You had to. You have to decide whom. All right. So I want to get to little more here on just what's next with this Roger Stone. Then I want to talk some socialism with you. I can't get enough of socialist talk. So let's talk about Roger Stone. What is next here with Roger Stone?
He'll go through the court process, and I suspect they will probably work out a plea. I don't think this is going to trial, the speculation will just continue. And like, this is what I've said this on your air, and I've written about this. You'll see these graphics, you know, of Trump and like all Trump's associates who have been charged, and then they hit these little links and arrows, and it gives the veneer that there's this big conspiracy that Mueller is working his way through, and he's going after Larry, and it's going to get Trump, and perhaps that is, you know, what will happen. But it's a curious way to build a conspiracy case, because no one has actually been charged with conspiracy. I mean, if you look closely at these indictments, a bunch of Trump associates did things that were embarrassing or that they didn't really want known, but were not actually against the law, and they lied about it. I'm not defending that, obviously, but that's not the same thing as participating in a conspiracy. None of these people have been charged with underlying crimes, involving the election. It just typically, when you're building a conspiracy case, you indict, say, like in a drug case, all the street dealers, you charge them not just with the drugs that they have, but with the conspiracy, because then they're responsible for all the drugs, not just, you know, the dime bag in their pocket. And then they look at really long time, and then they give up the people, their suppliers, and they get charged with conspiracy too. They all get charged with and admit to conspiracy, and then eventually you get the top guy. But no one has been charged with conspiracy except for the Russian Facebook trolls. They're the only ones that have been charged with conspiracy to defraud the American electors on the election. Interestingly, no one's even been charged with the hacking yet. Russian internet agency that was doing the Facebook trolling, and the Justice Department at the time stressed that no Americans knowingly, aided them in any way. So there just doesn't seem to be a connection yet, and if it's true what the Attorney General said yesterday, that this probe is close to wrapping up, it seems strange you're going to come out with a report detailing how Trump, participated in this big conspiracy when no one's been charged with conspiracy. So I'd like someone to explain that to me.
All right. I want to switch gears here, and people can check out more on this over at KirbyOnPolitics.com and Kirby's Take. And you start off by writing, socialism is all the rage in Washington and among regular Democrats throughout the country. Now, you and I have not had a chance to talk since last week, but I've been saying, hey, if you look at if you're trying to make an argument, if you're somebody who is arguing against socialism in Washington, I would point to good times in Venezuela, and just show what has happened there over a couple decades in Venezuela. But socialism seems to be popular, but I think that's because people forget what socialism is like. Except in Europe, I guess, right?
And in fact, I mean, this is a definitional thing. Gallup has asked this question periodically for decades as to, what is actually socialism? What's the definition of it? And in 1949, people were much more likely to give the traditional definition of, the government, owns the means of production or controls the means of production. And that was sort of what the understanding of socialism was, more of a Venezuelan-style economy. I don't think today's millennials think of that when they think socialism. They think of like Bernie Sanders style socialism, European style socialism, you know, countries with really big safety nets and social spending. And you think your Scandinavian countries and the Netherlands and places like that. That's not really socialism, though. Those countries are capitalist countries. They have private ownership. They have rule of law. They have consistent rules in place. You know, the government does not own and control the major producers of the economy. What they do is they tax a lot and they redistribute it. So I think that is what they're talking about when they talk about that. So, you know, I don't know of anyone that's pointing to Venezuela saying that's our model.
right, true.
But Norway isn't really a socialist country either. In the definition that, you know, that we thought of it when we were growing up, you know, they've got this kind of softer definition. So that's number one. So number two is, okay, well, what would that mean if we had that here? Because it's very appealing to a lot of people. But the conceit is that, well, we'll just tax the rich more. We'll make the rich pay their fair share, and then we can have all these programs. But that's not the way the European socialists do it. If you look at the tax rates, which I did in my blog, of Norway and Sweden and Denmark and those countries, they have very high taxes, and not just on the wealthy, but on regular people. I went through and looked at the data by the OECD that looked at what does the average wage earner pay in taxes, not what the rates are, but what they actually pay, and they pay a lot more in those countries than they do in the United States. So, and they also have value-added taxes, which are, you know, a regressive form of sales tax that they all pay, you know, about 20-25% in most cases. So they pay, they get a lot from government, but they pay a lot, and they don't just have the rich pay for it. So if that's what we want, we can have that, but we have to be clear-eyed about the fact that it's we're not just going to have Bill Gates pay for it.
Let's do this. Coming right back. Can you hold on with us through the news break?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Because I want to talk more about this. Is it socialism or some kind of version of an egalitarian society that has people enthused about this socialistic idea? Socialist in Washington. We'll continue our discussion with Brendan Kirby. Go to the website right now. You can read along with us, kirbyonpolitics.com.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Now, let me see, any snow plows? No snow plows. Actually, it was never forecast for us, but it was kind of a non-deal, which is... It's good, except there's a bunch of kids that will have to do an extra day of school, I guess. Maybe they lose it during the spring break, or do they have to do it at the end of the season? I guess at the end of the school year. Washington County, Clark County, Monroe County, they were out today. I think Greene County, Mississippi as well. All right, check in with my friend Brendan Kirby. You can check out the book Wicked Mobile. Pick it up in stores here locally and also go online and pick it up, right?
Yeah, Arcadia Publishing is the publisher. You can buy it directly from them. You can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble online probably has it. You know, there are places to get it.
All right. And over at KirbyOnPolitics.com, reading, and you know this story, the kind of stuff I like to talk about, your headline, Socialists Don't Just Tax the Rich. And part of it, I think that's interesting. If you and I went and did the man on the street interview and asked people that were big fans, they said, we're big fans of socialism. And he said, do you think the government should own the businesses, the means of production? I think majority of them here in the United States would say no, I don't want that. I just want there to be a fair playing field out there. I want to get things evened out. I mean, it seems like the desire is for some kind of egalitarian society or some softening of the peaks and valley, and not really the old line definition of socialism.
Right, that's exactly right. And in fact, when I wrote this blog and I tweeted it, I got a response on Twitter from the Socialist Party of Britain of organizations, and they replied and said, "Hey, this is fake socialism. What are you, you're misleading people. This isn't socialism. We believe in the ownership of the means of production and the economy belongs to everybody. That's just wishy-washy social democrat stuff where they just tax and redistribute. That's not real socialism." And it's 100% right. Which I mean, I actually point that out in the blog. It's not, you know, real socialism, what, you know, genuine socialists would think of as socialism. But it is a much bigger, more redistributionist, you know, government than we have now. You know, so people should probably rest easy, you know, if you are a small business owner, America's socialists are probably not going to try and nationalize your company, but you might have to pay higher taxes if they get their way. But
everybody will, right? I mean, the small business owner...
Yeah, I mean,
the...
And this is just... I really think that, you know, I'm obviously personal views on things and political views, but mainly, I just want people to have the relevant information. And if we decide that we want to be like Denmark, then so be it. But people should understand that what they have in Denmark is people pay a huge percentage of their income in taxes, directly taxing their wages, and then indirectly through value-added taxes. And it's not just the rich people, it's regular people. And if that's what we want, so be it. But you don't usually hear, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Ilhan Omar and Bernie Sanders and the leftists in America say that. You know, they sort of present the idea that we can have all that and we'll just get the rich people to pay their fair share. But here's the problem, Sean. The rich people don't have that much money. You know, the real money is in the middle class.
And that's why we've talked about this 100 times here over the years. I always tell folks, I said, they're coming for us. They're coming for the middle class, not because we have so much money, but there's so many of us that as a percentage, they can raise so much more revenue so much more quickly by focusing on us.
And that's correct. I quote Brian Rydell, who is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's done a lot of research on taxes and the history of taxes and has some really interesting data. And one of the things that it really blows you away when you see it is if the government were to confiscate all income over $1 million. So not a really high tax rate, but just if you every penny you make over $1 million, the government's just going to take it.
Okay.
You know, which
everybody would make $999,000.
That would assume that people would actually keep working and not try to flee to low tax countries if that actually happened. But let's just assume we had that in place and all the rich people kept working as hard as they do now, knowing that they won't see any extra penny and they don't take any measures to try and protect that extra income. But let's say if we did that, that would come out to about 3.8% of the GDP, which is not even enough money to balance our current budget.
Wow.
Let alone pay for Medicare for All and free college and all the new stuff that they want to give us. So,
wait a second. Did you just say pay for free? Wait a second. Did you say pay for free college? It's free college, Brendan. Nobody has to pay. It's free college. How do you pay free college? Wait a second.
Yeah. someone's got to pay for it. I mean, you know, and part of that is because the really wealthy people tend not to earn, you know, incomes mostly. That's not where they get their, and they've got wealth. So I guess we could have a wealth tax and go after people's wealth, but that would be more controversial. And remember, the top 1%, they're the most mobile people on the planet.
Uh-huh.
It's the easiest for them to just pick up and take all of their assets and move. You can go to one of the islands in the Caribbean or Hong Kong or another place where they're going to be able to protect their wealth, and then they leave, and the country is worse off because we don't have any of that wealth here. So it's just, you know, that's not going to, I mean, we can have higher taxes on the rich if we want to do that or make a fairness argument, but we can't pay for the welfare state just so that. We would have to do it through more, you know, because the middle class in this country pays very little in taxes comparatively. If you compare it to the other industrialized countries, they pay way more. Again, they have this value-added tax, which is this big national sales tax, and it imposes a tax at every level of production.
Wait, I guess it's worth
into the cost of everything they buy.
Explain that, because people who haven't studied that, I mean, I've often used the loaf of bread, or you can pick whatever widget you want, and explain how that happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about, like, in terms of a car, you know, when they make the steel and they, you know, they sell the steel, you know, you're buying the steel for the car, you pay, you know, that gets added to that. And then you make the improvement, then you improve the steel, you know, so that it's ready to go in the cars, and then they hit you on that improvement, and then into the car, and then, you know, finally at the retail level. So it's more insidious than just a regular retail sales tax that we have here at the state level, where, you know, they just add, you know, 4 or 10%, you know, onto what you buy. It's at every level, and it's embedded into the cost. You don't really see it. I mean, it's perfect for the politician, because people pay the tax and they don't even realize it, because it's just, you know, embedded into the cost of the good. But, you know, it still works like a sales tax. It's still aggressive. It hits, you know, poor people harder as a percentage of their income. And they're paying higher income taxes, too. I mean, the middle average wage earner, they pay that VAT, but they also pay higher effective rates than the middle class does here. I mean, the fact is, we already do soak the rest. The wealthy pay a disproportionate share of our federal taxes, you know, because we have a progressive income tax system. I mean, you pay a higher percentage as you earn more money going up the line. So it's just, you know, that is not going to do it. And people point out, hey, well, what about when we had a 91% tax rate?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the top rate was 91%, and that is true. In the 1950s, the top marginal rate was 91%. It didn't kick in until, you know, after something, I think, like in inflation-adjusted dollars, if it were today, it would be like people are earning over $400,000 or something like that. So it didn't apply to that many people, and there were a lot of different loopholes and shelters and ways around that, and once the accountants went to work, you know, it hit even fewer people. And again, this Brian Rydell came up with this stat, which is just stunning to me. In 1960, the total number of taxpayers who paid the top marginal rate was 8. Now, that's
what?
Not 8%.
What?
That's 8. 8 individual taxpayers paid the top marginal rate in 1960. So if you look at it at a macro level,
wow,
the top 1% pays more now as a share of GDP in taxes than it did then. So we had these really high rates on paper. But they were, you know, it's kind of like, you know, truth and sentencing in a criminal justice standpoint. You know, we didn't have truth and taxation. We had on paper these really high rates that no one actually paid, and the top 1%, you know, had a lot more loopholes and deductions than are available today. So we actually get more money out of that group today than we did then. So you know, taxation is complicated, but the bottom line is, you know, they don't, you know, there's, you know, billionaires are an anomaly. There's not that many of them. So we can't just get all their money because, as you said, the middle class collectively has more. That's where the money is. And there also tend to be more loyal taxpayers, because if you hit the middle class, you know, we have less tools at our disposal.
Correct.
To avoid taxes.
Yeah, we don't have the mechanisms to, you know, we can't leave, we can't adjust, we can't have people working, you know, billing hour after hour after hour to figure out how to avoid, you know, our taxes. So, well, so we have to talk about this again, because I do wonder, the Ocasio-Cortez of the world, I think, are the low-hanging fruit for news groups, because that's going to be the quote that's interesting. That's something that drives a conversation. I don't know that that is the new Democrat Party, as many on the right would like to say, and I understand the political reasons for it. I'd like to paint all the Democrats out. They're just like that. But I wonder, is the gravitational pull of these egalitarians or the socialists, is it enough to pull the Democrats to them, or are they just going to be simply a, you know, a socialist satellite spinning around that planet, to take the analogy
far?
They
already are pulling them in, actually, and if you look, especially younger people, millennials are you know, more comfortable with the term socialism than they are capitalist. Now, maybe that will change when they get older and they have to. They figure, I don't have anything. I don't own anything, and I don't make a lot of money. I'm young. Let's have socialism and start benefiting from some of these programs. You know, and they graduate with this really high college debt, you know, which puts them in a sour mood. But as they get older and accumulate more wealth, we'll see if they have the same attitude. They might not. Ocasio-Cortez's top policy guy said recently that every billionaire is a policy failure. And as if to emphasize it, his Twitter handle is every billionaire is a policy failure. So he and she literally don't think it's moral for people to even be billionaires. And I went and looked that up too in the blog. Sweden has a lot of policy failures. You know, they've got two fewer billionaires than Japan. Even though Japan has a whole lot more people. On a per capita basis, Sweden has more billionaires than we do. So, you know, Swedish-style socialism doesn't prevent billionaires. And Venezuela, by the way, they only have two. So maybe Venezuela is the model. A whole lot less, quote-unquote, policy failures in Venezuela than in Sweden.
Yeah, I don't want to strive for the Venezuelan model. As always, man, I enjoy talking with you. People want to get in, interact with you on this story, everything else. Where do they find you?
You can get at Brendan K. Kirby on Twitter. I've already gone back and forth with the Socialist Party of Britain and some other people on that blog. And I've got another. The most recent blog up now is on the vaccination scare and the measles outbreak in Washington State. Maybe we can talk about that later in the week.
We'll do it, man. Thanks for being on. We'll talk soon.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile here at FM Talk 106.5.
This here's a story about Billy Joel and Bobby Sue. Two young lovers with nothing better to do. Let's sit around the house, get high and watch the tune.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, what happened there? I know that story, though, because they ran it last hour. They're putting it for free. You see the Black Panther for free. And I was like, oh, that's cool. How magnanimous of the movie company. And then Dalton pointed out to me this morning, yeah, Sean, it's they do that to get people fired up for the Academy Awards. Oh, there's that. All right. So that took all the fun. I was thought, oh, what a great, nice thing they're doing for we the people, and then I get it all ruined, that it's actually just a stunt to hopefully get awards for the movie, and then the movie will make more money as it's distributed on demand. And you know, do they still make DVDs? Whatever they do. All right. Coming up next hour, Todd Stacey joins us here in just a few minutes. He's with Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We've got a lot to talk about with him. We'll talk about the Cliff Sims, and we're about to get into that as well. The Cliff Sims book, and also what's getting ready to happen leading into sessions starting in Montgomery in March, and also new high-tech ways to pay for your parking downtown. Laura Byrne from the City of Mobile joins us next hour as well. And let's talk about saving some money here. Harry's. I've been telling y'all about shaving with Harry's for, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. It's probably 4 years. 4 years, probably. We've been talking about it. How does shaving with Harry's help you in the new year? Number one, let's just get to it. If the shave wasn't any good, then I wouldn't tell you about it. Shave is great, all right? So that's our anchor. That's our base. On top of that, saves you money every time you shave, and you got the convenience of not having to remember to go buy replacement blades. So be smarter with your personal finances in the new year. Be smarter with your time. And the folks over at Harry's pointed out you could save $100 a year if you're a regular shaver. This is fantastic, and here's how it works. Harry's has got a great deal. If you ever were on the fence about getting on with Harry's, the time to get off the fence is now, because they want you to start the new year off right, and new customers right now will get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for $3, plus free shipping. Just use our code MOBILE at harrys.com when you check out, and you're getting the whole kit for $3. For a limited time only, Harry's has a special offer for y'all. New customers get $5 off the trial set from Harry's. So I don't get that deal because I'm a long-term customer, but y'all do. New customers get $5 off the trial set from Harry's when you use the code MOBILE at harrys.com. I mean, you get the razor, the weighted handle, foaming shave gel, travel cover, all for just $3. Free shipping when you use our code MOBILE over at harrys.com. Join the millions who've already switched and go to harrys.com today. Use code MOBILE at checkout to claim your offer. $3. Get off the fence. $3. All right, 1254 FM Talk 1065. And hopefully coming up within the next 2 weeks. And somebody was asking me about that on the text line the other day. They said, hey, when's Cliff going to be on the show? I've been trying to get Cliff Sims on to talk about this book for a while, but today, the day the book officially went on sale, so the chances are probably within the next couple of weeks, Team of Vipers author Cliff Sims will join us on the show. Now, if you've been listening to Midday Mobile for any period of time before 2016, halfway through 2016, Cliff Sims used to be a guest on the show, but once a week, if not more than once a week. And he and I would have, he was running Yellowhammer News, yellowhammernews.com, running that back then. And he and I had a real good rapport. We didn't agree on everything, but we had fun. We had the same kind of general attitudes about, holding statements made by politicians up to light and just making sure they were all what they said they would be. He's a conservative guy. Cliff Sims, extremely conservative guy, but still a guy that wasn't going to be, at least on majority of stories, not jumping in on the bandwagon. We'll put it that way. So Cliff then calls me, I guess it was actually during one of the breaks when we were on there, and we went to a news break or whatever, and he said, hey, man, because he and I had been talking about this candidate, Donald Trump, and we both were some of the doubters, right? I've told you all that before. I mean, a doubter of Trump, there's a difference between a doubter and a never-Trumper, but I'm still a doubter. I'm somebody who tries to analyze each thing the president does and make sure that it fits, with what I think we should do as a country. Now, you may disagree. That's fine. That's what talk radio is all about. But back then, we were questioning, Cliff and I both, is this the most conservative guy that can be elected, right? Because we're looking at some pretty conservative folks in the field. And then Cliff tells me one day, he said, hey, man, I got a heads up here, and I just want to let you know, I'm going to take a little sabbatical from Yellowhammer News. I said, oh, gosh, what happened? He said, I'm going to work for the Trump campaign. I said, you got to be kidding me. And he did. And then, of course, became part of the administration. Now, flash forward to, 2018, when, depends on who you ask, president said he was a gopher and a low-level guy. Either way, president's saying he was fired. Cliff Sims says, in fact, he wasn't fired. He was put up to be, and I remember that, chief of staff for Pompeo, and then he wasn't confirmed by the Senate, is why he's out. Cliff Sims is out. Either way, whichever version you want to take at this point, he's out and writes this book. And I tell you right now, whether it's just the marketing team behind it or just the nature of what's in this book, it's going to be a big seller. A big seller, and I caution you, and I'll talk about this with Todd Stacey next hour. Right now, people are like, oh, that book is just a hit piece on President Trump. I have not read it. It may be, but I would be surprised, knowing Cliff, if it is. Just think about the fact that if CNN or Morning Joe or Axios, if they're doing an interview with Cliff and they're pulling clips or segments of the book out for him to react to, they're going to pull the ones out that are saying something bad about President Trump. That doesn't mean in the next page, next chapter, he doesn't say something good. Cliff always seemed to be a fair arbiter of those things, and I just wonder if the press junket next week will go to the conservative outlets, and there'll be a whole different set of clips being brought out of this book, Team of Vipers. But we'll talk about that coming up with Todd Stacey, and also we'll check in with Laura Byrne with the City of Mobile. Automatic paying for your parking. No more quarters, nickels, and dimes. You just swipe and pay.